So tell me a little bit about your backgrounds.
I love it. What an awkward situation to be in. No wonder these people look at us like we're nuts when we walk in.
Starting where?
Yeah, so how far back?
Well, take us all the way back. Where did you grow up? Start, Nikki?
Sure. I was born in Oakland, California, and my family all lived within a couple of blocks of each other. We were sort of a tight family unit, Portuguese, and my granny lived down the block, and my uncles and aunts lived a couple of doors away. And I'm going to make a huge leap and come to UCSC, University of California at Santa Cruz, and that's where I went to school for the last few years of college, and did not meet Davia there. Did not. We were both at UCSC, but we did not know each other during our college years. Davy?
I grew up in a suburb in Los Angeles, and my dad had gotten his place from the GI Bill, and it was just as my parents had moved from New York, actually to move to San Francisco to be journalists in San Francisco, which never quite happened, but anyway, they got waylaid in L.A., and that's where I grew up, and then went to, but not with a big extended family around me, much more of that sort of people leaving their parents behind and starting out in the West from New York City. And then I went to UC Santa Cruz as well. I was the noon disc jockey in my high school and used to write fan letters to disc jockeys from, you know, the time I was 10, 11, 12 in LA. I was just fixated on radio since I don't know when, and on the sound, not just of the music, but on the people introing the music as well. And so I was the noon disc jockey in my high school, and then went into the campus radio station in Santa Cruz, UC Santa Cruz, and then to the community radio station, and especially got interested in the lives of the old people in the town and doing stories with them, and that led me to Nikki.
Now, how did you get interested in the lives of the old people?
I think that Santa Cruz is this beautiful town. The university was pretty new then, and there was such a division between the university and everyone who'd been there for years and years, and I kept feeling that as I was in school. And I always have loved stories, and I didn't know a lot about my own family's history, and I think somewhere in me, my curiosity, but I'd always loved history, and I think a lot of it was like this curiosity about this family that I couldn't really find out about. And it just pushed me and propelled me towards everyone else's story. And the old people just seemed to, I mean, none of this was conscious. I don't think it's looking back, I think all those things. And just kind of was getting drawn in those directions all the time into who could tell a good story.
And you were getting these stories on microphone to broadcast?
Yeah, sort of, I think. I mean, I was starting on an old people's show called Every Wrinkle Tells a Story. And you know, we were just, I can't even remember exactly what it was. It was always eclectic mixes of Ravel's Bolero into some, you know, story of someone old, and then some swing music into something. It was this eclectic early morning. It was on so early in the morning, I can't remember, because I don't wake up until about 4 in the afternoon. But and then Nikki was doing similar work at the museum in Santa Cruz. And I was also at that same moment working on a documentary about 19th century women outlaws of the West, and starting to kind of travel and get that going as well, because again, the history things and criminal justice issues were really important to me right in that same period of time. So I was combining all those interests.
And this, what kind of documentary was this?
It was what is now known as multimedia, which was, I didn't know that definition at that point, but it became a slide tape, synchronized, you know, multi-machines, but again, in the 70s, so low-tech version of what now would be called a PowerPoint or whatever those presentations are.
Okay, so when you all are, how then did you meet?
Well, I was working at the Santa Cruz City Museum of Natural History doing an arts program and a history program. I had just returned. I'd been in New York City for a year on a fellowship in studying museum education at the Metropolitan Museum, and it was this wonderful program where we were given money to do whatever our hearts desired. It was that very experimental, wonderful era of big grant money and lots of people thinking suddenly in museums about, oh, maybe we should let other people in the doors and try talking to them for a change and try and make the museum relevant to the people. And so one of the projects that I'd worked on when I was in New York was making a film. And when I look back on that film in that same way that Davey is talking, you know, I didn't think about it at the time, but I mean, it really was in that same way that her Women's Outlaws of the West documentary sort of foreshadows a lot of what the Kitchen Sisters have kind of become. I think that film that I made in New York with another artist friend kind of foreshadows the work that we do. It was a story of a janitor or a guard at the Museum of the Metropolitan Museum of Art, and he gives you the tour. His vision, his view of the Metropolitan Museum from the skywalks, from the basements. And he was also a weightlifter. And so he, on his lunch hour, would walk in the basement of the museum past these row upon row of Rodin sculptures, you know, and all these wonderful muscular poses. And they were in storage, and he'd walk past those to this little room where he'd put on heavy metal music and pump iron. And so we got this guy's sort of little snapshot of him in this museum setting, and then talking about the Monets and the artwork from his point of view, and talking about what he'd learned from watching the visitors and how they react and respond to things. So it's kind of a straightforward thing with a little twist, a quirk, a quirky kind of look at history or a way into art or a way into the museum. And I think that kind of is a lot of what we still do with history and our programs about people. So anyway, I came back from this fellowship and was working again at the museum, and I got a call from Davia, who says that I snubbed her. Now,
doesn't have to go into the record.
Yeah. Well, this is good.
She does say that I was in a very difficult time, but she says I just sort of snubbed her. But anyway, not for long. And she showed up one day to talk to me about these old people, because I was doing similar things with exhibits. And we wound up sitting on the porch of the museum, which, if you've been to the museum in Santa Cruz, it's right across the street from the ocean and has this glorious view. And we wound up sitting there for 4 hours and kind of talking about our love lives and falling in love, and that was it. So we began working together shortly thereafter. Is that about right?
Totally right.
Is that how you remember it?
So what was your first project? What did you decide to collaborate on?
You know, we've been trying to reconstruct that, too. Memory, it's so fleeting.
We think that maybe we did one or two radio shows, the live weekly radio show. It was still called Every Wrinkle Tells a Story. I had been doing it with somebody else at the time. And then we think that I left to do the Women Outlaw. So the West, for 3 months, I traveled all over the West in a van chronicling the lives of these women. And I think that then Nikki, the first thing we did together was that I left and Nikki did the radio show herself, having
never done radio. So
but, we're not sure, but that's something close to that. We kind of did a little bit together. We had the sense we wanted to do a lot together. I went off. She said, I'll try this. And then we think that she wrote a grant. I think you must have written the CCH grant. I think.
But we had obviously talked about it, and hadn't we?
Maybe.
Anyway, the California Council for the Humanities, we wrote a grant to do this oral history project, the Tri-County Oral History Project, San Benito, Monterey, and Santa Cruz counties, called Every Wrinkle Tells a Story. And we had several themes we were going to pursue and do all of these oral history interviews and create these hour-long programs for radio. That was our vision of it. We got the grant, but it was a matching grant. and we were given $12,000, and we had to raise $25,000 or something like that, which at that time, in those years, was a lot of money to try and raise. And we went practically kind of door to door raising money to do this project, and we'd get these $10 donations and $20, and at one point we considered selling Freshgar, this garlic product, to try and raise money for our project. And it was a wacky time.
But we barely did any radio because we were so hard trying to fundraise. But it was this really interesting point of view on a community too, because you were suddenly, we were the Lions, the Kiwanis, the Rotary, any of those kind of local clubs, the banks. I mean, you suddenly see how a community supports or doesn't support projects in which it does. And when you get, because a lot of the same people we were interviewing, a lot of these older people who were part of the fishing industry, or I've been obsessively thinking recently about Battling Nardo. Remember Battling Nardo?
Yeah, I just used part of his oral history in an exhibit that I was working on. Yeah.
So just different people, and they, a lot of them, it turned out, were in these clubs because they were the old Santa Cruzians who were part of the kind of infrastructure of it. So it was always that kind of crossover between who we were interviewing, who would then take us down to the club where we would do a talk kind of like we did today, only we hadn't done anything really at that point. We were just
planning,
about to do it,
right,
and had a vision of what it might be. But I think we thought we'd do far more traditional oral history shows. We were doing a weekly show, so now we're back. We're doing this weekly show. We've both kind of cut loose from our other things, and we were starting to just, it was a very luxurious kind of time where we just got to sit there every day and, say, read a newspaper and see Nikki, I think, read a newspaper that said pool shark in town. And we would go see what the pool shark was and bring our tape recorders, or, you know, go to the little convenience store and run into the Road Ranger and then decide to follow the Road Ranger as he rescued stranded travelers on Highway 17. And we were getting, or, you know, it was election day, and our show was always on Tuesdays. So we would always try on Tuesdays to come up with something a little more interesting and offbeat. We'd go to we'd call in our own show from telephone booths around town and drag people into the telephone booth to talk to us via the telephone as we're in. Just each Tuesday was coming and featuring artists and writers and
our friend,
music.
Our friend had a Tupperware party, and we went, which just led into this big piece on Tupperware where we began tracking down and all the different folks in the community, and went to several parties and went to where they train the Tupperware dealers. And so that was a real fun one.
So what year did you get the California Humanities Council grant?
Ooh, you're asking really hard-hitting questions. What do you think? Oy.
78 or 79, no, I would guess.
Probably. Yeah.
Okay. And what?
Around the late 70s.
And we didn't have National Public Radio in our town at that time. We'd never heard National Public Radio. Our station was a community station and didn't air any national programming. And as we began experimenting on our radio program, we realized pretty quickly that we couldn't use these long form oral histories as they were on the air. We realized that right off. So we began editing and sort of taught ourselves to edit, as I remember, and thought we thought that we invented the mix. I mean, we were completely convinced that we had come up with that idea of, you know, you putting a little music under there and doing a little of this and that. And we started to make these short little snippets that we would then put on in the midst of our show, and we'd set it up. We'd say, oh, we went out this weekend to San Benito County, and we saw Lola Golly, the woman who's the champion rodeo roper, and, you know, and here's what she had to say, you know, and we started playing these little things. And then we ran into this costumed crusader, the Road Ranger, who was this fellow who cruise Highway 17, the local highway, the very rugged, windy road where there are lots of people breaking down all the time, and he would rescue stranded travelers. He would fix their automobile, and he wore a jumpsuit outfit, and he drove in a Ford Ranchero pickup truck and that said the Road Ranger on the side of it, and he had this wonderful demeanor, and it was very theatrical. We did a piece on him. We got in the car with him and drove up and down the highway rescuing stranded.
He went on patrol. We went on patrol.